Welcome to the Lavo Show podcast. Conversations with outstanding human beings whose love has been inspired and transformed by Osho. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Ma Yoga Shanti. Shanti took sannyas in 1973 and has been part of the Osho community since then. Shanti runs an Osho meditation center in her hometown, Seattle. I'm so happy to have Shanti on the show and I hope you enjoy it. Shanti, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hello. Good. Thank you. I met Osho in 1973 on Christmas Day, but I took sannyas on January 7th. 1974.
Oh, okay, yeah. Great. So thanks for the making it clear. And so I'd like to start with a question on how you have come across Osho.
Yes, I became interested when I heard the word meditation. That was in about 1972. I didn't know what it was, but something in me woke up and just said, I've got to learn that. And I tried sitting Zazen, but I couldn't sit still. I had money saved because I had taught in a university. And so I took that money and I was pulled. I felt like a pull to go to India. My mother asked me, why are you going to India? And I said, I don't know, I'm just pulled. And the minute I got into Delhi, I landed in Delhi. But actually it was maybe a couple hours, I was in a hippie hotel and I met English Bhakti and she told me about Osho, who then was Bhagwan. And as she was talking, an inner voice inside me said, you're going to meet that man when you go to Bombay. And my outer part or the other part of me that didn't even know why I'm in India was going, oh, am I going to go to Bombay? It's my hippie part, kind of like, oh, okay. But I didn't go to Bombay until 9 months. 9 months later, I was at Osho's feet on Christmas Day. Yeah. I met Bhakti again when I was in Nepal by chance. I was going up Jomsan and she was coming down. She was going to an Osho meditation camp in Manabu. That was the second time by chance I met her. I then, after I finished going up and down Jomsan, I moved into a little boarding house in Swayambhu, Nepal, next to Ma Anand Jyoti. And she and I traveled together in India. And she's the one that brought me to Osho on Christmas Day, 1973.
Okay.
That's how I met him.
Fantastic. So you mentioned before that you were interested in meditation, but you couldn't sit still. Mm. And when you arrived to Osho in 1973, you basically could not meditate, even though you are very much interested in meditation. Mm. And I understand Osho said something like, you know, just practice my techniques and meditation will happen to you. And it did happen. And
he asked me, first of all, he turned. And I think it was, Jyoti told me it was an unusual darshan, because it used to be just one-on-one, but this time he asked a group to come in of people. So I don't know if it was the first time there was a group or not, because I just newly arrived, and he was in Bombay. And he turned to me suddenly and said, tell me about your meditation. And I said, I can't do it. I can't sit still. And I was so sure he would say, you have to leave because you have to sit still. And I had met other mystics traveling in India, but no one had ever asked me about the meditation that I couldn't do. And so when I said, I can't do it, I can't sit still, and I thought he was going to tell me to leave, but he had a big smile and he said that's why he created these active meditations, that many people can't sit still in this day and age. And that was 1973. He said, first of all, you're Westerner. You don't even have it in your background to sit still. But he said, even the Indians are having problems now being able to sit still. He had to bring out new meditation techniques that were suitable for mankind as they are now.
And that was 1973. Today we are in 2018, and we all know that our lifestyle is becoming more and more sedentary, and many people have to work long hours sitting in an office and stuck in traffic, and we are going towards a way of living where we use less the body and much more the mind. So despite meditation becoming mainstream, I hear lots of people saying, I can't sit still, I can't meditate. So can you explain how, in your own personal experience, Osho Active Meditation can help address this issue?
Yes, I can. Because what happened was, he then gave me the dynamic meditation to do. I told him I was going to go, and then I'd go to his Mount Abu camp. And he said, great, I'll give you two meditations to do so that will prepare you for the camp. And one was dynamic, and the other was more of a passive one, but it had activity in it. And so I did those, and that was it. I never again thought I couldn't sit still. That never came up, because doing dynamic and all of the other meditations that we ever did, I was able to sit. And the same with sit in the discourses, listening. I could sit and just imbibe them. And that's why I can share the meditations when people say, I can't sit still. I say, well, I couldn't either, and now I can. And actually, Osho, he had told me if you do my meditations, I promise you'll be able to sit still. And in a darshan, 5 years later, he turned to me and he said, now you can sit still, you can do zazen. And I was so shocked, Swarab. I had forgotten I ever wanted to do zazen, and I couldn't believe he remembered and that he was saying that to me. So,
yeah, that's quite impressive. You know, how can he remember such small details? And he has so many people around him. And I hear this happening with other people. So, I mean, either his memory was super developed, or the man was operating from a different level that it's hard for us to understand. So I'd like to go deeper in how you are helping people nowadays, sharing your experience and whatever you have learned from Osho. And that linked to the fact that you're running a center in Seattle. And I know, reading some of the things you wrote, that at some point Osho told you that when you would go back home, you will be of great help to him. And there is always some mystery around how to interpret the words of a master. But one thing is certain, after many years living in India, you eventually went back home and opened a meditation center, and you do share Osho Active Meditation. So I'd love to hear, how did that happen?
Oh, yes. He told me in 1975, I had come back. I had been working in Seattle to earn money, and I came back after 5 months of being away. And I was telling him different stories of what had happened while I was in Seattle. And then he turned to me and he said, we were looking at each other at that point, but he said with these great, dark, big brown eyes, when you come home, you'll be of great help. And I kind of froze, because I always wanted to leave Seattle, and so I didn't consider it my home. And so I interpreted, he means coming home means when you get enlightened, and of course everybody's of great help, and I just dismissed the whole thing. So it was really strange. Many years later, in 1997, I was asking inside myself, I felt like I had to leave India and the life I had been living. That part was over, and I wanted to settle somewhere. And I asked inside myself about my mother, who was widowed, and an inner guidance said, now you go back to Seattle and you help her. And it's also a good opportunity for you to look at a lot of your conditioning. And so I went back to Seattle with Subban, and I just knew. And from then on, it was like my belly was guiding me. It's so interesting, not my head, but my belly was saying, and you teach the meditations and you share the meditations. And I remembered at some point feeling, well, it's different than being in Pune sharing the meditations. And I don't know much about meditation. I was like, got really insecure. And I just kind of got this guidance. No, you go and you put it out. And even Osho was, it felt like he was saying, I also was learning as I was giving you the meditations. And you'll learn how to give the meditations and teach them. And I realized I had to keep my meditation going. I couldn't stop, because if you're teaching meditation, you can't teach from a book. You teach from your own experience. So that also helped me keep my meditation practice going, which is what I longed for. And in the center, I've set up a center, and it is to share the meditations, but it's also what I'm realizing. It's also to give me that base of discipline to keep my meditation practice going.
That's absolutely wonderful to hear. I have a very similar story. You know, when together with Chetan we were in London, the reason why we started offering meditations and gathering with friends was really just for us to keep practicing and committing to something. And then slowly you gather other friends and you create a community, and it's much easier to meditate with others. So to run a meditation center, the one that benefits the most is the person who runs it, in my experience.
Yeah.
And so on a practical level, I know that there are challenges. It's not easy. Mm-hmm. So especially for people who might be thinking of sharing Osho meditations and opening a center, how did you go about the issues around running a center?
Yes. Well, first of all, I think that a really big key, which is still happening, is that it's really coming from my belly to do this. It's not coming from my head. My head actually freaks out sometimes. I go, what are you doing? This is impossible. I had visions of it being like a big center, and it isn't. It's not a big center, and it's never been grown in that way. But still, it keeps happening, and people come. And what I learned was I couldn't depend on there were the sannyasins that were living here to help with the center, because they weren't interested in doing that. They said, oh, we'll come. And they did come, and then they didn't come. And I saw if I keep pulling at them, I'll start to hate them because they're not coming to the center. I have to find, and Subban too, we have to find our own people. We have to go out and make contact with all sorts of new people. And we had to do a lot, and we still have to do a lot to bring income in. We totally support the center. Everything that we do, even when we do workshops or wherever we travel or any little job, all that money goes into the world of meditation to keep it financially afloat.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I can't remember the question. I mean,
No. Like, well,
But it was all from my belly. And my girlfriend Pradeepa, you know, you probably will interview her, who leads Vipassana. One time she said, well, this is ridiculous, because sometimes nobody comes for meditations, and sometimes 12 or 15 people come. And then when we have satsang, sometimes we have 30, 35 people. So you never know who's going to come, who's going to show up. The older sannyasins come for satsang, and newer people come for the meditations, basically. And people who, this is interesting, because in Seattle, there's Microsoft in the greater Seattle area. There's Amazon. So there's a lot of people from India living here, and they know of Osho. And a lot of times that crowd comes. They've read Osho, or they maybe have experienced meditation, and they come for meditations. Besides people, we are members of Meetup, and we have our website. And then even at fairs, that's what we were doing when we first started. We would work street fairs, and I was reading tarot cards, and so was Subban, my husband. And we were also selling collectibles, which is more his thing, but that's what we were doing to bring money in. And we meet all sorts of people that way who then came to the center. And so what happens is, I always say our center has two wings. One is It's for people who want to meditate and they can't do it. And I even have the logo, you want to meditate but can't sit still. And they come to learn meditations. They're thirsty and they come to learn. They know nothing of mystics. They know nothing of Osho. Just like me, I knew nothing of that world. And the other wing of the meditation center is for those who either they do fall in love with Osho or already are connected with Osho. And that's how our center has always been. But people who come to our center now to learn meditation hear of Osho right away because we do call it Osho Kundalini or Osho Dynamic Meditation. And we start speaking about him. And when I lead meditations, depending on which one it is, I also talk about other mystics. If it's like the Tibetan Nada Brahma, I'll talk about Tibetan Buddhism a bit, just so people are getting flavor that there's this whole world of mystics and consciousness and meditation. Yeah.
Wow, that's wonderful and sounds very, very similar to what Chetan and I have been doing. And also it's very interesting that if people are really sincere with sharing Osho and meditations, it's hard to turn this into a business. And most of the time, it's really how you make it sustainable, putting your own money rather than making money on it. And that's...
it's totally like that. I mean, it just is for us. It's been like that. But my belly, the belly is guiding, and every time I want to give up, it goes, no, just keep going. You know?
Absolutely, no, keep going, because what you're doing is absolutely amazing. And I've heard you say that people who come to your meditation center connect to Osho, and that you yourself feel the energy of the days with Osho. I'd love to hear if you can talk more, if you can expand, and if you can explain a little bit more on that.
Well, when we first started, we were called the Shadow of Love Meditation Center, which is a name that Osho gave to Subban to have a meditation center. It was actually Premchaya, which means the shadow of love meditations. The shadow of love, which is as your meditation deepens, the shadow of love begins to grow. Or if you're on the path of love, as your love deepens, the shadow of meditation begins to grow. So we took away the Hindi Premchaya, and we just called ourselves the Shadow of Love. Well, that wasn't very good because it seemed very sexual. And finally, we changed the name to the World of Meditation. But we were careful about bringing in, like advertising it. Like now I say the World of Meditation and Osho Meditation School. That's what I have on my website. In the beginning, we didn't do that. And a lot of it was because there was either you had to have an AIDS test if you were an official meditation center, and we didn't want that, so we were more of an information center. And also we wanted people to come, and because we're close to Oregon, we didn't want people to be put off and not come because of the name of Bhagwan, really. And maybe we thought, well, if they just come and try the meditations, and then they get to know that, oh, this is Osho's work, this is Bhagwan's work, and that would be good. But as I said, now I just put out as Osho. I don't have that anymore. And even in Seattle, when we first went, we were selling Osho books at the different fairs. And sometimes people would yell, oh, that's the guy from the ranch, he's evil, just as they walked by. Or other people would stop and look and be curious. And after about 5 or 6 years of working at the fairs, it all started to change. And people would go, they'd run up to Osho's books and they'd go, I know this man. He's my master. And they'd be all excited. And I'd say, oh, really? Well, we have a meditation center. They never came to our center. But suddenly I started seeing people were connecting. I think it's the work that they're doing in Pune. The books were coming out and people were really getting in touch with Osho and finding him in that way. And there was just a new breed of people falling in love with Osho, but they didn't necessarily have any interest in being in a center or even doing his meditations or being connected with anyone GNU Osho. They had no interest about that.
Yeah, that's very interesting, and it leads me to the next question. I personally, that's my own personal experience. When I first came across Osho through a book, I just totally fell in love, and then I wanted to do this meditation. Then I went to India, but at that time was late 90s, and the idea of taking sannyas was very strong. And when I went to Pune, I could see, you know, lots of people, all sannyasins. No one ever pushed me into sannyas, but I personally felt like I don't need, you know, I love Osho, I do the meditation, I read the book, you know, why do I need to take sannyas? But then one day, I don't know what happened, I just woke up and went without thinking. It was just very irrational, very unexplicable till to my days, to today. You know, I just went and I said, I want to take sannyas.
Yeah, I know.
So how do you explain that people today who never met Osho in person want to take sannyas? And what's the importance of it? In your experience, you're running a center, you might have some people coming to you who just read an Osho book or have tried a dynamic at your center, and then at some point they will say, you know, they start asking you questions about sannyas and they want to take sannyas. So what's, in your view, the need of sannyas today?
I don't know. I actually don't know. That I don't, in our center, I know I've been in an other center where having people take sannyas is really important. I don't have that in me. I just share the meditations and I talk about Osho and my love for the different mystics and Osho and this whole world. And so I'm always surprised when someone will suddenly say, I want to become a sannyasin, or they'll ask me what it is, or they'll ask me about the name change. And then they all come in different ways to sannyas. And I get kind of surprised, like, really? You want to take sannyas? Okay. That's so great. And I really don't know. I know for me the importance, how it was important. For me, I had the same feeling as you. Like, why do I need to take sannyas? I'm already a sannyasin. That's what I thought inside. And I remember the first time when I left Osho's room in that group sannyas, that group darshan, that was unusual. I heard my girlfriend who brought me, Jody, say to someone, I'm so shocked he didn't make her take sannyas. And I remember Jody told me, he's going to make you take sannyas. He's going to throw the mala on you. And I remember inside myself going, better not do that to me. I don't even know what it is. I didn't know. I don't even know what a mystic really is, even though I had met them. I didn't know anything really. In my deeper part knew much more than my top part. So this girl who Jody whispered to said, well, she's not ready. And I remember just being shocked by that. And so when I went to Goa to do, and I did the meditations, at one point it was like you. I mean, it was a little bit different story, but after dynamic, I suddenly saw myself, I was on Arjuna Beach, and I saw myself walk into the meditation house that was there, walk into the tiny little room, and suddenly my body was bowing before his picture. And I was brought up Jewish, and it's really strong, you don't bow before any other god. And I was going, what are you doing? What is this? But still the body, it was like something deeper took over. And then my body turned to this other wall. It was a very small room, and there was this picture of Buddha. And my body took this position, like an asana, and I don't do yoga, but it took a position of a statue I had seen while I was traveling in my travels in India of Buddha. And then a message came, you're not sensitive enough to be in touch with Buddha's teachings anymore. You need a live master. And then my body turned and it faced another wall. And it was another Hindi, it was these Hindi Bindi pictures, I call them. But it looked like there was this couple meeting and all the gods and goddesses, the Hindu gods and goddesses were around blessing them. And a voice said, if you come this way, you'll need someone that will be a good match for you. And then again, it faced Osho's picture. And then whoever I am, the two parts came back, more back in the body. And I stood up and I went, wow, I think I'll take sannyas. That nothing like that has ever, ever happened to me before. And so that gave me, having that experience gave me the feeling, and none of the other sannyasins in Goa ever pushed me, that I was, it's very personal, and I never know when someone will make such a deep commitment to become a disciple to Osho. Yeah. I think it's very mysterious.
It is very mysterious, and I think it's beautiful the way you put it. You know, we can only talk about our own experience, and then I personally can't explain it for myself, so forget about trying to explain it for others. But it does happen, you know, that's...
It does. Like, we just had someone take sannyas. I'll tell you what happened. I met him at a fair reading tarot cards, and at first he came... One day he just showed up and he thought we were the weirdest group. We do this, it's called the Sacred Sharing Circle. He thought it was the weirdest thing he ever experienced and he'll never come back. He didn't say that to our face. He told us this later. And then all of a sudden he appears. I don't know how much longer has gone by. And then he buys all these Osho books. And then a few days later he said, I threw them all away. Like a whole lot. They were so expensive. And I'm like, oh, okay. And he just took sannyas. Like, suddenly, you know, 5 years later, he said, I want to be called Krishna Prem and I want to become a sannyasin. So, you know, I don't know.
Yeah,
all the time.
I don't know. But it does happen, yes. And it happened to us in London with actually most of the friends who would come to our meditation events, and then slowly we turned, I think 80% of them eventually they took sannyas. But obviously, wow. Yeah, as the same with you, we never, you know, pushed anyone or even talk too much about that. It's just something that people feel a pull, people. And it's important that there are centers and people like you who are there, who just facilitate and offers the space and the opportunity for those souls who feel the connection with Osho, they want to get closer to Osho, and they feel like jumping into sannyas. So it's wonderful, and thank you for doing that.
And you know what, like in Europe people are much more open to Osho. I think in America it's really different. It's really I have to tell you, when we first started teaching in Seattle, I applied and I taught at continuing education courses in, like, they're called community colleges. So I taught a class, and then I taught at the University of Washington and Bellevue, which is where Microsoft is located, at the community college. But what we did at first was, not my first class, but maybe my second or third term, it was like 8 weeks classes, I decided, oh, I'm going to introduce dynamic, the first class. And Subhan was helping me with the class at that time. And we did it. And the next time, like 80% of the class had dropped out. They were so freaked by that meditation. That's in Seattle. And so in even doing Kundalini, they were freaked that they had to dance. And one person, he like stood in a corner, and Subhan went up to him and Subhan said, is everything okay? He said, I don't dance unless if I had like 5 drinks under my belt. And so we started to see we have to introduce the meditations very differently than a person who goes to India, you know, just jumps right in.
Yes, I think that's a good point. We experienced that, especially here in Singapore, coming from London and used to the people who would come to us, and most of the people, even though they didn't know much about Osho, yet they were really interested, or they've done some other type of meditations before, and they were open-minded. You know, London is a place where people love to experiment with new things, and there is very... little that can completely shock you. I mean, dynamic is shocking, and sometimes few people freaked out, but it's a minority. Whereas when we arrived here in Singapore, we didn't appreciate the different climate and background. And in fact, we actually now stopped for a number of reasons. I don't want to go into details there. But I think it's true what you said, that you need to consider who are you talking to, and there are different ways of introducing the meditation. It's a very important point.
Right. Yeah.
Hey, so yeah. The next point that I wanted to discuss with you is about the regular practice of meditation. In my experience, mm-hmm. the only way to progress in my spiritual path is to meditate regularly, at least for me. And I understand that you personally have a regular meditation practice, which I believe started in 1973 when you met Osho a long time ago. So it's been many years. So how important is for you to have a regular practice? And then if you can share some useful tips for people who want to meditate, but they struggle to introduce meditation into their daily routine.
They can open a center. That's what you can do. That's how I do it. But I have this, I have this deeper part of me that really is the one guiding me in meditation and to make it a daily practice. And it's so easy in the world to not do that, to get lost. So when we were living in Maryland, that's on the East Coast of the United States, we had a store that was in right after the ranch, and we weren't meditating. And then there was kind of a big drama with our housemates and stuff. And I told Subham, we have to start meditating. We just have to. And so we started, and it changed. The other people didn't start with us, but we did. And I saw the difference just in our how we were able to be more of a watcher in situations. So from that moment on, in me, I just have to find a way to bring meditation into my life. I have to find the time. I have to make it. Like people go to the gym regularly. It's that kind of discipline of time. And every time I do the meditation, and I do a variety of different ones, I'm always, it's like kind of going from the surface of life back to myself. And it's like I'm nourishing, I'm eating of myself and eating of the divine, you know, stepping in to the inner world. So it just becomes so important to me. But, you know, like I said, I have the meditation center as an anchor for this. And when we're in Maryland, we just made it our habit to meditate. And then we went back into the, you know, back into India. So then it's easier in India to have the time because it's set up that way in Pune.
If I hear correctly, what you're saying is that, of course, there needs to be an individual commitment, and then you get nourished through the practice, and which inspires you to do it more and more. But then it's also important, if someone is living somewhere where there are not many others, to start your own thing, and then you attract those are the people who are interested in meditation,
right.
And
yeah,
that's probably the best way. And then here and there, just go, instead of going on holiday, like traditional holiday, you can take your time off work and go in India or go into some meditation retreats where you can go deeper. So I think that could be a good formula for people who live the average, let's say, standard life where you have to work and you have, you know, a short time.
It's true, you know. There was this. We teach. We also travel and teach Osho's meditations, and we also go to this hot springs in Oregon every summer, and we lead an Osho meditation camp. And one lady, she talked like that. She lives here. She never comes to our place. And yet she said, I wanted to go on a holiday, I just wanted to be in the sun and hang out. And I suddenly ended up in Pune. And she entered that world, and that became her world. It's so interesting, but she never comes here to us. But I just found that interesting. She just stumbled upon Pune, even though she wanted to go and hang out on a beach. And instead, she started hanging out with her inner self.
That's nice. So instead of going to the beach, go to your inner self. Okay, Shanti. So we are heading towards the end. And before I ask you three final questions, I'd love to hear about your current activities. Of course, you're running a center and you're busy with that. But is there anything in particular, any project you're working on at the moment?
We're always, so with the center, we're always having to have different activities happening. So I'm always having to make mailings and put up new listings on our website. So like we have workshops. This time we're having a workshop that Subhan is presenting about looking at money and the issues we have around money. Then we have New Year's Eve party. We have laughter meditation on New Year's Day. We have an Osho birthday celebration, a satsang. We have live music then. We're fortunate Subhan is a musician and he sings really well and composes songs. He's written some of the songs you might know, like Om Shanti Shanti. And so we have live music at our satsangs. And then we have a tradition of winter meditations that we do, the darkness meditation for a week. So I have to always advertise that. And we're going to do an art group. Somebody wants to do different things.
Wow, sounds like you have lots of activities going on. And the darkness meditation, I think, is superb. It's so special.
I know I'm skipping around, but that I want to say when you ask me what's my favorite meditation, I have a lot of favorites because Osho.
Hold on on that. I'm going to ask you in a second.
Okay.
So where people can find you if they want to get in touch with you or if they live in Seattle or if they're traveling in Seattle and they want to do some meditations?
Yeah, we have an Airbnb through the center too if they're traveling. So we have space to put people up and they can go to the worldofmeditation.com. We're on Facebook, World of Meditation. I just started Instagram, World of Meditation. We also have Osho Seattle Facebook.
Perfect. And I'll link everything into the notes.
I even do an Airbnb experience. There's now Airbnb where you can stay, but there's also they have Airbnb experiences. So I've advertised Airbnb experience for people to come and do meditations. And that's how I got in touch with you at first. I'm going to do one, make a special Airbnb experience with pictures of people doing dynamic. And put that out too as a special one. So people who are traveling to Seattle and want to do meditation will at least read about it.
I did that in London and Singapore as well. But of course, as I mentioned, it's all on hold at the moment. So, but that's a great way to attract people. Wonderful. Okay, Shanti. So I've got three final questions for you. The first one is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours?
I know, I always laughed at that when you ask people. We stay up very late. A lot of our meditations are late and people stay late. And then when everybody's gone, that's when I can do a lot of work where nobody's around and I'm not interrupted. Same with Subhan. So sometimes I go to bed at 1 or 2 and I wake up at 9 or 10. And often I have to get up right away to do my other job, which is I send out packages. I'm like a fulfillment house for my friend's business. Or my mind is going like, how am I going to create the day? What's going to unfold? Or people are coming to help us with the center. So it's kind of, my mornings are pretty chaotic, actually. They start about 10.
Okay, so in your case, the better question would be, what's your night routine? Because it looks like that's your me time for you.
The night routine is, especially after the meditation, there's a different quality. And then there's more silence inside and everybody's gone. And I feel like the late night is a bit like the early morning. There's a stillness in the whole city, or at least where we live. There's a stillness and you can kind of ride on that. And then just we're very quiet and we can go about doing a lot of times this work with the center and what we have to do, working on the web and that kind of thing. Yeah, so that's what it's like. And I don't drink coffee or tea until like midday, and then I'm really good at making chai.
Okay, thank you for that. So the second question is, what's your favorite meditation and why?
OSHA gave me a lot of different ones throughout the years. So I don't really have a favorite. I like a lot of different ones. And so I introduce a lot of different ones in our center because I have such great love for them. But I did want to bring up, just to share so people know, we do the darkness meditation, and we do it for 1 week. We make it like an hour and a half event. The first few minutes we dance, and that's upstairs. Everybody dances. We have an upstairs meditation room, and then we come downstairs and we make our meditation room like a cave. It's totally pitch dark for that week, and we sit in darkness. And how I do it is I'll read what Osho has said, different statements he'll do from the Book of Secrets. It's an ancient meditation technique that Shiva gave to Shakti. It's also the Essenes that practiced it. So I'll just read different things that Osho has said about it before we start the darkness, and then we go into the darkness. And I just love it. And we always get a large crowd. Even if there's a snowstorm, people come for it.
For me, darkness meditation is one of the most powerful, mysterious and simple technique that you can do. But of course, to have complete darkness, that's a challenge. And that's why I can't do it. And it seems...
I know. You have to make it a cave. And how we first started, not in the center, but when I did it in Pune. But then Subhana and I did it when we were... once visiting my mom in Seattle, and we couldn't find any darkness. So we sat in her bathroom. That was the only dark place without windows. And that's where we did it, in the bathroom. And we had to put a towel under the door so the light wouldn't come in.
Yeah, but the good thing with darkness meditation is that after a while, you don't know where you are. There is no space and time. So even sitting on the loo is fine.
It's just pitch, And another meditation, I know we're just supposed to do one, but I have to tell you, because we have a small creek by our house, in back of our house, in our backyard, and a waterfall. And so... another favorite is it's a technique that Osho told us, but it's from Lao Tzu, where you just sit and you watch the river flow. I love it. And that's what we do. And I always tell people this ancient, and Lao Tzu would have all his disciples just sit and watch the river flow.
Wow, we had so many things in common, because this is something that I didn't know about Osho and Lao Tzu. It's something that I do spontaneously, and you can ask Chetna. I always say, when we retire, I want to live by the river, because for me there is something about that. I just sitting there and watching the water flow, and with the very loud sound, but at the same time it's so relaxing and peaceful, and then jumping into the river with the energizing fresh current of the water, and normally it's cold, which is so good, so it's great.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah, that's my dream. Okay, so the last question is, you lived the OSHA experiment. You were one of the pioneers in this movement of creating a new man, Zorba the Buddha, and realize Osho's vision. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today in 2018?
I don't see how I could have ever been without him. I just wanted to imbibe him so much before he left his body. I had heard him say that. I heard him say, Mayor Baba said, don't look at me, look where I'm pointing. And when I was in the ranch, there was this possibility that Osho was going to leave the body, or that was the rumor. And I remember I was working in the bakery at the time going, I'm not ready for this. And so I put all my energy to how to be ready. So when he leaves the body, I have imbibed him inside me. And when he did leave the body, the first thing that came was, I'm ready. You know, he's there. But now, so many years later, I see I'm imbibing more and more. I'm tasting him. I'm feeling him more and more. I don't know what to say. Sometimes I'll even say, I wish you could see this. I wish you could see this, maybe some beautiful side. I don't know what it is. And then I feel I'm saying, I am seeing it through your eyes.
Well, that's really very, very beautiful. And thank you for sharing that. So, Shanti, I feel very closely connected to you for some reason. And even though we live so far away, Singapore and Seattle, the two polar opposites, but I feel very close. And who knows, maybe one day we'll meet somewhere. If I travel to the USA, I'll definitely come and visit
you and see
what you're doing with your center and learn from you, because you know, in the back of my mind there is always the idea that at some point I will just retire somewhere in nature and create a space for people to come and enjoy Osho's energy and Osho's meditation. So, well, that's the end of the show. It's been a real pleasure talking to you, connecting with you. Thank you so much for your story and your beautiful insight and your laughter and your energy. And I'll send you a big love and lots of love.
I send you love too. I love what you're doing. I love it so much. And I wrote you, but the minute Mina introduced me to you, it was on Facebook, to get pictures about the dynamic. And I started to read about you and Chetna. And then it was like, oh my God, they've never met Osho. And yet there's this vibe in them that just like me, you know, this vibe of Osho. I don't know. It's the mystery, yeah?
Oh, it is indeed. It's very mysterious. But yeah, for us, Osho is fire, you know, it's fire inside, and we feel so close, so connected. And like just now as I speak to you, I feel this very strong energy inside and connection to Osho, and my heart is singing. So it's beautiful, and that's the most meaningful thing in my life. That's the most fulfilling thing. Well, Shanti, thank you so much. Lots of love, and I hope to meet you in person one day.
Yes, me too. We will.
We will, yes.
I don't know how, but we're going to.
Okay, thank you, and bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Love of Show podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your appreciation by leaving a review on iTunes. Visit loveofshow.com for new episodes, blogs,
and much more.